There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the deal we got? I mean, the deal we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
And away we go, FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you here on this Tuesday. And this hour, your chance to ask the sheriff as guest in studio, Mobile County Sheriff Sam Cochran. Before we get into our conversation with the sheriff, I do want to give you a heads up. This weekend, the greatest show in sport fishing, the Blue Marlin Grand Championship at the Wharf. It's not often the fishing tournaments are spectator sports, but this one is. It's been billed as the Super Bowl of sport fishing. See huge fish like blue marlin, tuna, mahi-mahi, which I call a dolphin. Different, it's not flipper, calm down, dolphin, and wahoo get weighed in what feels like a rock concert. Huge sporting event all happening on Main Street at the Wharf with the big jumbotrons and crowds and a new hot surprise in store this year, too. They're holding out on me what they're going to unveil at this year's Blue Marlin Grand Championship, but I know when I say they, it's our buddy Jim Cox. Okay, of course, Jim Cox, Master of Ceremonies, and his partner, Kelly Finley from Mobile Mornings, will be hosting the show. They'll be on TV with it as well, and we'll be on the radio with it coming up on Thursday because, for the first time ever, Midday Mobile, which is surprising the way I am, this would be the first time ever Midday Mobile will be done from a, I would say boat, but in this case, sport fishing yacht, 92-foot sport fishing yacht, as we will do the show live from on the water in one of the pace boats, getting everybody out and fishing in the Blue Marlin Grand Championship. More details online. You can go to Facebook. You can go to their website, BlueMarlinGrandChampionship.com, or just search for them on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, and we'll see you down there on Thursday to get everything started and throughout the weekend. More details coming up, but yeah, the show going live. We'll see you down there at the Wharf on Thursday. All right, second Tuesday of the month. That means Mobile County Sheriff Sam Cochran in. Hey, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Glad to be here, Sean.
It's can I ask, I know people got questions for the sheriff, and they can hop on at 343-0106. They can also text 343-0106, but I'm going to butt in line here and ask the first question.
Sure.
So I'm watching today before the midday show starts, and I see this alert going out that we have an RV wired with explosives. Somewhere there in Theodore, right?
Mm-hmm.
And
yes.
That's the story. And then I ended up seeing Captain Paul Birch later being interviewed and saying, well, we got a camper with fireworks in it. How did this whole thing go down today?
Initially, it started a man called in a bomb threat.
Called it into where? Like to y'all in law enforcement or called it into
I forget who he reported it to. Okay. It was reported to us at Knollwood. Okay. And so we started cross-referencing and identifying, you know, where the bomb threat came from, and of course went out and arrested the guy. Then the guy advised the people that he had wired with explosives this RV, which then of course created a follow-up major problem then, and of course you got to go check it out, and we called out the Mobile Police Department's bomb explosion division, and they're trained and they're regional, and so they came out and had to, you know, we did an inspection around the outside of it, flew things around it trying to look, and then Eventually they moved in and got into it and found out that there were no wired explosives, but that there were a lot of fireworks in there.
Fireworks.
And I think the guy's got some, obviously, in this case, he's got some mental issues, too.
Yes, anybody calling it a bomb threat. I mean, I'm going to go out on a limb and say, describe to us quickly just your time, of course, running things at MPD and now in the Sheriff's Department. What does it look like for those of us that maybe have watched one movie too many or show too many? Bomb disposals, is it like the show where they wear the suits and stuff like that?
It really is. It's very, what you see on TV is very accurate, and how they, you know, disrupt bombs and stuff like that, and wear the bomb suits and the bomb shields, or either use the, in the early days, the robots. We still have the robots, but In the early days, robots never worked, and you'd spend all this money and you'd walk the robot up, and something would always mess up, and then you'd end up having to send the human at the end of the day, the human up there to
I would think suit. That would
but
be
now
like
the robots are a lot better, and they can actually function, thank gosh.
So wait a second. So there's experience for you. Had you roll the robot up and do all this stuff, and then finally go get the robot back here. We gotta send Sam up there.
Yeah, exactly. That's how it used to work in the early days.
I love knowing,
you know,
the real
stuff. It was awful because you'd realize that you either used a grand or something, spent $40,000 or $50,000 for this super.
Because they came in and said, "This is
robot.
The thing that protects
thing,
humans."
You know,
right.
When the bomb, you know, back in the late '60s and '70s, mm-hmm. when bombs were really, you know, coming about, you know, and you had different bombings of, you know, churches and
yeah.
people, and the federal judge killed, and so
yes.
it was a big push by, you know, the federal government to outfit all the agencies across the country, and that's where we created a lot of bomb units, bomb disposal units. Then, of course, you have the conveyor where you carry the bomb off somewhere, you know, if
right.
you get it in there, and it looked like just this big, huge, gigantic metal barrel on a trailer, you know, but that's the bomb conveyor, because again, if it blows up, it shoots straight up, you know, and it doesn't
right.
damage anything. But to look at it without understanding, you say, what in the world?
What are they doing?
What is that? You know, it looks like one of those things that you put the dummy in, you throw the softball, and it drops you down in the bucket of water. It sort of looks
well,
like
I know
that.
What you're talking about
yeah,
now.
Yeah.
Okay, so and thank goodness it was what it was. It was fireworks in a, mm-hmm. in a camper here. But I also heard Captain Birch say, took a lot of time today, took a lot of units away from what they needed to be doing.
Oh, absolutely, because you've got to work so slow and meticulous, and you've got to protect each other and protect the area. You don't know exactly what you're up against,
right.
so it's very slow moving, and of course, in Mobile weather, it's extremely hot.
Oh, yeah, I can see
imagine when someone puts on a bomb suit or something like that, just how difficult physically it is.
Yeah, it was to think about it from his perspective that you have, you know, we're reporting the story and we're thinking about all eyes are focused on the story. At the same time, in a position as being a sheriff or if you were a chief of police, you got to think about, even though you got to focus on this, you've got a whole county to deal with. They got a whole city to deal with.
Sure, everything else is still going on while
yeah.
you've got this detached unit. Of course, that's, you know, is how they're prepared and trained and prepared for those.
How does that work? Do you have a, you know, with obviously some things, I don't want to divulge mm-hmm. everything, but in a situation where you had something that's very abnormal
mm-hmm.
going on, and Lord, God forbid anything, but that's going on, how do you staff that event? However, at the same time, have the number of deputies
out? Well, you
have
your initial responders, and then they would call for backup and specialized units, and then they'd move in the specialized units.
More deputies come in that
yeah,
might be off that day?
Yeah, they'd be more specialized,
okay.
and if you needed more, you could actually call people in, and then essentially that becomes an operation in and of itself, and, you know, we have different radio channels, and maybe those involved in that special operation will all switch to one channel, and so the rest of these channels are still, you know, functioning properly, answering calls around the city or the county while this specialized unit's working on a side channel.
Because, it would just, so, okay.
And
so
then you'd have, like, the communications. You might, then an operator may be specially assigned to work just with that group, and they'll take them off of the mainstay. And
so there's like a flow chart with y'all that if this happens,
less, yeah.
and this
mm-hmm.
happens,
exactly.
and this happens.
Exactly. And then the bigger the incident, the more things roll out. And if it's a major occurrence, then the emergency management agency would go up, and then they would be sort of our backup, and then you start reaching out for more resources, like the state, and if we needed resources from federal government, we'd go through the state and to the federal government. And then, of course, different criminal things, law enforcement things, then the different federal law enforcement agencies, FBI and Secret Service, played key roles in bringing in the resources.
I'm learning stuff, like every time you're in here. All right, coming back, your questions as well for Mobile County Sheriff Sam Cochran. Your chance to ask the sheriff right here on FM Talk 106.5.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 120 FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile on this Tuesday. Yeah, good to have Mobile County Sheriff Sam Cochran in the studio. Your chance to ask the sheriff, and I'm sure we'll get into the normal discussions of conceal and carry that dominate 30% of our discussions, but also some on the side. This is good to talk about right now. Jason asking questions about judges right now. We've got you have runoff right now in the primary. A lot of judges out there talking about being tough on crime. Let me flip this around. I'm going to kind of edit a little bit of what Jason asked here and just ask you this. How are judges not tough on crime? Because this is a good perspective you have. I mean, you're in law enforcement. You're getting the bad people. You're putting them there, and then you've done your part, but you've got to get frustrated when you see those people get back out.
Yeah, occasionally you might have a judge set a low bond or let something slip through, but by and far they normally are doing their job and following the law. And we as civilians get frustrated when we see a criminal get out, but we forget that all of them are entitled to a bond unless it's a capital offense or unless they've been out on a bond and they violated conditions and get rearrested or violate that bond, then the judge can hold them without bond. And most of the problem is the criminal justice system is such a large system and there's so many moving parts. Somebody may be out on a bond somewhere else, gets arrested here, and then they get a bond, and then it's like, well, why would this guy get out again? It doesn't make sense, and we all understand that. But
From the outside, this is why it's important, because the outside looking in, I understand what the folks on the text line are saying, that we hear, you know, when y'all are looking for somebody or you just arrested somebody, but the picture you're showing us is their last mugshot and the mugshot before and the mugshot before, we throw up our hands and say, what the heck is this, you know, dirtbag doing on the streets?
Right. So oftentimes we arrest somebody, but the victims don't follow through with the prosecutions. And the system itself is so huge, it's sometimes the system is glad to just get rid of the case, where it's, to me, I've always said, look, let's follow through with everything we can, because you bird in hand's better than, you know, two in the bush. And if we get them on this, at least we've got them on something. But it is. It's just the system is so big, and of course it's cutting back. It doesn't have the full resources it needs, lack of employees. And again, there's so many moving parts, from, you know, from the police officers to the prosecutors to the judges to the probation and parole officers to the prison systems, and you know, and then the jail issues, and all these things come into play. But it is interesting and rewarding for us to hear that the judges that are running are talking tough on crime, because that's what the citizens want to hear. They want to know that they're tough on crime, and we do know that incarceration prevents crime. There's no question about it.
100%. What did you tell me years ago? Like, Sean, if I could keep it, you gave me a percentage of people in jail, I could drop crime by this percentage.
Sure, as you know, and as the people recognize, it's the same people over and over, so they believe us when we say it's a small minority. Right. Of the criminals are committing the majority of the crimes, and that's true. And now, some used to say, oh, if you build a bigger jail, they'll fill it, or build a bigger prison, they'll fill it. See, I've never subscribed to that, because I think there are so many people that are good people. They're never going to violate the law. They're not going to be criminals. There's only a select percentage, and they're the ones that keep that revolving door. But let's say you or I, we don't plan on becoming career criminals.
Right.
And I know hundreds of thousands of other people that don't plan on doing it either. So if we had a bigger place, no, we wouldn't fill it up. It's just we've always had too small of places to house our prisoners and our mentally ill.
And there's another part of it that we've talked about in the past. And you said you called this back, and I think it was in the second term of the former governor of the state, or in the first term of Bentley, when he made the changes in the state, pull back what they were contributing for mental health care, and consolidated like at Bryce or a couple other places, and left places like Searcy defunct. You said they're shifting this burden to the jails.
Are. Just like the early release, they're shifting the burden back to the local jails, local communities, who have to rearrest them, re-prosecute them, lock them up again when they should have still been serving their time in a penitentiary. And
that seems penny wise, dollar foolish, right?
I mean, that part of it is. But from the mental health, I think they figured out, they'll never admit it, but they figured out it's cheaper to house somebody in a jail than it is to house them in a mental institution.
It's a travesty.
It is a travesty.
I mean, because there are different things, right? I mean, there are people that mentally ill. Now, sometimes those worlds overlap between being criminals and being mentally ill.
That's right. But often they do.
But there are different motivating reasons there. How about that? Is
sure,
that fair?
Absolutely. And, you know, and a police officer at 2 o'clock in the morning has got a mental patient out there on the streets, nowhere to take him. He's homeless, and he's maybe drunk or disorderly, but he's maybe not causing that big of a problem, but he's got to get him off the streets. Well, it's easier to put him in jail, because you'll certainly not find a hospital to take him to.
That's been something over the last 10 years that has changed in our state.
It has.
All right, let's go to the phones and y'all's questions for Mobile County Sheriff Sam Cochran. And we'll go to Mike in Mobile first up. Hey, Mike.
Hey, guys. Hi. I'm Sheriff.
Yes, sir.
I grew up in Sims, and I've noticed a lot of crime around the Pritchard area. And I mean black and white, but is it gang-related? There sure are a lot of shootings that dominate the news. I'm wondering what's going on.
Well, I'd simply say that Pritchard's got its challenges. There it's a low, you know, high unemployment, not many jobs, a lot of socioeconomic problems. The government's not properly funded. They don't have a tax base. They've got a limited police force. And
how much do y'all have to? I mean, even though that's a municipal jurisdiction, how much do you have to?
Oh, quite a bit. Quite a bit. We handle all their major crime scenes. If they have a serious shooting or murder or rape or something like that, our crime scene investigators are called out. They don't do that themselves. We do it for them. And then the police department occasionally shares, I think, some other responses to them. So we help them out a lot. We also answer calls in the jurisdiction. But you know, you can find other pockets, whether it be Pritchard or even in the city of Mobile or maybe spots in the county. Crime is going to occur more often in lower socioeconomic areas.
Sure.
It's just certain types of crimes are. Of course, then, you know, you may not have huge thefts there because there's nothing to steal.
That's when it shows
up
in the other.
Then it shows up in the other, and then it comes back. But those are just the challenges we have. And, of course, you know, getting people educated and getting people jobs are the long-term solutions.
Yeah, Mike mentioned gangs, and I heard this discussion around this, what's going on right now downtown with this trial for the murder of a young lady that, a freshman at McGill.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was
an innocent bystander shot and killed Easter night, I think it was.
Yeah, I mean, in the same class as my nephew and the whole and I look at this, and the mention was, I heard a couple times, that this was gang-on-gang related. And I know in the past I've been told by folks in law enforcement here, Mobile doesn't have, like, a real gang issue, but is that changing?
Well, or is this, you know, just, you can argue all day about what is the definition of gang. I mean, it was sort of gang-related in that there was two groups or people against one another, and the kid that shot and killed her, did he get killed, or the one, or he somehow
one
involved.
From his group was at
yeah,
least,
shooting
now these are all allegations.
Now that person's essentially been killed.
And, yes.
And we find that very common, that if you look at in a family, you'll find that there are several members in two or three generations
you've
that have
told
either
me
been
this
murdered
before.
Or have been arrested for murder. And, you know, you'll have multiple siblings have been involved. And so you can confine it, and there'll be a murder and a retribution murder and another shooting and a retribution shooting, drive-by shootings.
Right. What was it? A couple of months ago, Chief Batiste said, we're not going to put up with this, whatever he called it, feuding. And I'm putting words in the chief's mouth, but something to that effect.
Yeah.
Vigilante. And
many of the homicides in Mobile are retribution-type things, without a doubt. And somebody shot somebody, and then they go back, shoot them, and it's just awful.
But in this case, in the not to take away from the retribution killings that are going on, but you have an innocent young lady.
Right, exactly.
Murdered in this situation.
Because someone just not randomly, but fired at the suspect. And, of course, whoever he's trying to kill, of course, they immediately knew to take cover because of the life they live. They know they're subject to be shot any time because they've either shot somebody. But the poor innocent girl and the other bystanders, they're not sitting on pins and needles thinking at any moment somebody's going to open fire.
Right.
And that's what happens to innocent people.
And on the gang thing, you're saying how you define
we have
a gang.
Some gangs, but a lot of it is more neighborhood related gangs,
not the stuff we see in the national
Crips and Bloods. Now there's one Disciples gang that sort of shares Mississippi and Western Alabama. We have some problems with, and it's not a huge thing, but it is a problematic gang, and they commit a lot of crime. But the inner city things are more. Start out as sort of territorial and just groups of friends versus other groups of friends that are at odds with one another.
And by definition, I guess you can accurately say that's
a gang. It's a
gang. But it does, when I hear gang, I think some national group.
And occasionally you get something started, it's more of a crime, more of a little criminal gang of drug dealers or something gets started, and you say it's a gang.
This is an enterprise,
really.
Yes, this is a question from the app we're always talking about, and you can go on the app for Team Sheriff and see the probably. I'm just guessing again. The most popular areas, who's the booking portion of the
that's
app?
That's right. Yeah. See who's been arrested.
This question's a good one here. Billy says, in the app, under the mugshot of someone arrested, list of crimes for which they have been charged. Quite often, you will see the phrase safekeeping. What is that?
That's where they've been arrested for either the federal marshals or somebody have arrested somebody on a federal offense usually, and we're holding for the U.S. Marshals or Because if they're arrested for probation violation, they generally say that. But it's usually a federal inmate.
Okay, so safekeeping means y'all have them, and then the law enforcement from a federal level is going to come get them.
Get them eventually, yeah. We have, I think, 63 federal inmates in jail yesterday.
There you go, Billy. I hope that answers your question. Yeah, that's one I wondered about myself. We'll get your calls when we get back at 343-0106, 343-0106.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 137 FM Talk 106.5 at Midday Mobile. Billy saying he thinks it's great that the sheriff takes time out of his busy schedule to stop on by and talk with us once a month. I got to second that, Billy. Thank you.
Well, thank you, but I pick up a lot of information here, too, from the listeners. It's good to know what's on their mind.
And that's what we're here for. So you got a question, 343-0106, 343-0106. I'm going to go back to this gang thing for one second. You and I were talking during the news break, and I'd asked you about, the gang-wise. I thought about it back during, I think there was a story maybe 4 or 5 years ago where there was a motorcycle gang killing, I think, in Baldwin County. Associated with. Is that something that's present in the Southeast? Now, movies or TV shows make you think there's a motorcycle gang.
There's a little bit of it, but not a serious problem. It's not nowhere near our main concerns. I mean, we'll look at it from time to time. I think the last time a couple of years ago, there was a little bit of that. But most of the motorcycle gangs are out west Texas and further out west.
Does that some of that travel with the drug trade?
Yes. The original meth, they used to call it crank back in the late 80s and early 90s, and the motorcycle gangs primarily the ones that trafficked it, and they called it crank because they would hide it somewhere in a crankcase on the motorcycles when they transported it.
I was just thinking about it because we've talked in the past, and I like your realistic view of things. When you crack down on the meth manufacturing and the smurfing around here and all those things, you made things safer.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, we don't have motel walls blowing off and underground school buses full of bad chemicals, but you've also honestly said that it doesn't mean that the addiction went away for the meth. I mean, it still comes into our area.
That's right.
It just comes in from somewhere else. It's not being made here.
Exactly. Addicts are going to do whatever they can to get the drugs. Here's an awful example. I was told an inmate in the jail the other day was given their pill and kept it in the cheek for a minute, and then another inmate ran up trying to fish it out of their mouth.
A pill for?
I think it was
a prescription
pill, yeah. And this other inmate was trying to peel it out of their mouth.
that brings us right into the pill discussion as well.
That one bad enough, the victim had AIDS.
Oh my.
So what's that tell you about that?
Holy cow.
Yeah, it just sickened me to hear it. Maybe I shouldn't have shared it with
Well, I know, but that's, I think that...
But it just tells the power of addiction and
it should tell people don't start in the first place, because that's...
Oftentimes people, I don't think, fully comprehend the power of addiction, and I guess I've seen so many people over the years addicted and just the stupid things they do, and then a common everyday citizen that doesn't participate or hasn't been around it, they just can't understand why people would do that.
Right, why would they, and how many times,
and sometimes how they got there, because oftentimes we know of good law-abiding citizens that 6 months, a year later, all of a sudden you find out they've got a drug habit, and they may have gotten it by going to a doctor, being treated for, as we know, the opioid epidemic, that's how it got started.
Well, I'm thinking about tragic situation with the Attorney General's wife and the discussion around that and that addiction, and to think about having to be in his position, talking about this on a task force and federal, had those meetings up in the state and had the people from the federal level come in and all these discussions about opioid when it was something he was living
day to day with.
I mean,
in his own household,
That's about as real as it gets. And he's going to join us Friday on the show, and we're going to talk about that as part of our discussion. But that, to me, when I saw his, listened to him and saw him do that press conference, I said, that's as real and raw as it gets.
Yeah, it sure was.
I mean, here's a guy that is tasked with dealing with this on a state level. And many times I'm sure he'd wanted to say, I know what I'm talking about.
Yeah,
y'all shut up. I know what I'm talking about.
Who ever thunk it, so to speak?
Yeah. Right. But that tells you it's
it happens
everywhere.
In every household it can happen, with just everybody you think are decent law-abiding citizens, it can happen in everyone's family.
And we're seeing, of course, what's the high-profile nature of it is the fentanyl that's causing the overdoses.
Right, that's causing the deaths because people think they're shooting heroin or something, and they're getting a stronger version of fentanyl instead.
And you said this fentanyl, I know that some of the, what they say, imported from China and elsewhere, mm-hmm. it comes in, and then is it sold as heroin, or is it mixed with the heroin, or how?
The fentanyl is sold as
heroin. And what does it look like if somebody says...
You know, it comes in liquid forms and then convert it into powder forms.
Okay.
Then they can either mix it in with heroin or just sell it outright because it's cheaper than heroin. So if you can convince somebody that it's heroin...
Then there's better profit for
them. Yeah.
All right. Speaking of which, this texter says, Sheriff, who do we contact about reporting drug activity in our neighborhood? We have been seeing, we have been having a lot of thefts and drug activity stemming from one place and nothing seems to get done about it. So,
well, both the police department has a narcotics unit and the sheriff's office has a published number for narcotics as well. And it's best to speak directly with one of our investigators or investigators in those units because the more reliable the information is, the more details you can receive. Of course, on our website, you can turn in tips from our website and give us as much information and also on the text. Tip the text line as well.
Yeah, you've explained too why it's so important to offer this option for people too, mm-hmm. because if y'all show up in y'all may show up in a neighborhood,
mm-hmm.
y'all may show up in a series of houses and have a deputy asking questions about who did this or who's got the drugs here and there, and most people, are going to worry about saying something and having your deputy standing out front mm-hmm. of the door and then somebody going, oh, and turning and going to that house and there being a retribution.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, there's a problem when someone's standing outside selling drugs two doors down and you call and say, look, they're selling drugs two doors down, and that person says, well, don't come to my house, but here's where they are. And then sometimes it may be a mix-up or you're trying to figure out which house, and then,
I imagine people, though, want to be anonymous, too.
Absolutely.
Sure.
And they can stay anonymous. We don't have to expose them, and we can, protect their identity.
One thing I was in the discussion we had a couple weeks ago, when Amazon bought this big online drug distributor, which, by the way, the billions of dollars in that deal were unreal. Mm-hmm. I started thinking, oh my gosh, what is this going to mean if we have delivery of drugs? You're already getting the issues of people stealing the drugs and doing all these things to get, and they probably won't have Schedule I narcotics being delivered, mm-hmm. but I'm just wondering what that means. I mean, y'all are already dealing with everybody's, new pair of boots being stolen off the front porch or something like that. I mean, if there people think there are drugs there or something, my goodness.
You'd start stealing it that way. Of course, the Postal Service and FedEx and all are getting better at tracking their packages and letting you know when they arrive. And, I mean, I'm sure I have it on my text. If a package arrives at my house, I'll get a text that says, hey, it's just been delivered.
Right.
And so that's nice. You can either, if you've got somebody at the house, immediately bring it in or at least you know it's there.
And what about that, too? A lot of times when these stories come up, we have the video, and mm-hmm. people are sending all the video. Here's the front porch camera. Here's something. Y'all want that. You've told me in the past that if somebody has something like that, they're not bothering you to give you that video.
No, And we have people trained to download it off the different systems that are out there that record that. And we solve a tremendous amount of crimes by, whether it's your video or one of your neighbor's video, we solve a lot of crimes that way.
Yeah, these theft stories, I mean, heck, I see them on Facebook, and y'all will put the pictures up. You'll be somebody, and this is how I've seen it work, right? That somebody gets something stolen from their house. They're outside the house, and then they send that video to y'all. Y'all post that video up, and then people go, oh, yeah, I know that person.
Yeah, sure, it comes back right away. I think day before yesterday, or was it yesterday, somebody walked out of a restaurant in Sims, I believe, without paying two people. They had a buffet and walked out without paying. They had it on video, and they called in a complaint. I think Miss Miles put it on Facebook, and 30 minutes later, the people came back in the store and said, look, we want to pay for these bills.
Shamed
them into it.
That's pretty fast.
And I think she put out there, come on now, it's a buffet. You're already getting a discount. At least pay for it.
Man.
It wasn't a situation where they were disappointed in the food, but...
Right, but that there's something.
You the power of how quick it is because, we have 25,000 whatever people follow us on Facebook. So,
right.
And then they share it, and just within a few moments, it gets back to the original culprits.
I wonder why. A couple questions here are normal subjects and people asking questions about concealed carry.
Yeah.
And we've gone through this, but there's new people listening all the time. Mm-hmm. Somebody said, I want to transport the handgun. I do not have a concealed carry permit. How do I do it?
You have to put it in a locked glove compartment or trunk, locked up, unloaded, and secured that way. if it's
so if they're going to, they said they were going to the country to shoot, they
be locked up, unloaded, and out of reach. You can't have it in within reach. It's got to be in a locked compartment. So either your glove box is locked or in your trunk, unloaded.
Okay.
If you had a concealed carry, you could be carrying it in your glove box or on your person or in the car, loaded and everything.
But don't get me started. I had a rant the other day about non-concealed concealed carry. But that's all, you know. You know, if you're going to conceal carry, that's just, this isn't the sheriff. This is my personal vent. If you're going to conceal carry, which I'm a proponent of, then do it correctly. Don't, sure. Don't do a bad job of it. All right, let's see. Okay, one more question before we go to the news break here. Are lights, and I don't know if you can answer this, but probably, are lights for volunteer firemen illegal? I guess means some sort of red light, I guess. Jeffrey, who is asking the question?
There's an issue that came up about whether or not it's legal for a volunteer firefighter to have red lights on their vehicles.
To, like, get to a scene?
Get to a scene, yeah. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I think that it's not a properly licensed fire car or something like that. And that issue came up a few years ago. I've not heard anything on it since then. But there are some issues about a private civilian that's a volunteer firefighter just putting a red light on the top of his car and running down the street.
All right, there we go. So right now, I tell you what, we can research that and we'll find out.
Sure.
Maybe that's something we put up on the Facebook page as well. All right, coming right back, more with Mobile County Sheriff Sam Cochran. I do need to give you a heads up, though. I mentioned yesterday about getting the diet started here, getting everything hopefully in the... We're not changing huge amounts of how I eat, but one of the things to do is to make choices about getting grilled items instead of fried items. And I love chicken. I've talked about that. And often when you get grilled chicken, it tastes like grilled chicken, right? It tastes like, not really great. Well, Goldfingers has solved that problem. I have had the grilled chicken fingers at Goldfingers, and it must be the spices and obviously the fresh chicken they use. You don't feel like you're missing out. If you're like me and a fan of fried chicken fingers and you go, well, I don't want to give that up, go try these grilled chicken fingers at Goldfingers. You're going to love them. Check them out on Dolphin Street and in Saraland. And if you want to treat yourself, the fried are fantastic too, but the fresh chicken, the great seasoning, make sure you check that out. While you're there too, their chicken salads are there, piled high with chopped, grilled, or if you can, fried chicken. Try that and the pineapple chicken wrap and all the great items on the menu at Goldfingers. Check them out today on Dolphin Street and in Saraland.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 154 FM Talk, 106.5 and Midday Mobile on this Tuesday, 1 week out from the runoff for the primary, and more of your chance to get to know the candidates coming up from now on through Tuesday. And remember, when we talk to folks like Mobile County Sheriff Sam Cochran, those shows and all our shows are up online in the podcast tab at fmtalk1065.com. So you want to go maybe settle an argument with somebody about concealed carry or moving say, okay, I'll tell you what, you think you know something, let me go get hour number two of Midday Mobile from Tuesday, play the sheriff and answer those questions. And we'll get some more questions in the mix here. Let's see. All right. Who else can have the flashing lights in Mobile County? And again, this goes back to the question about the...
Well, the blue lights are restricted to law enforcement, have to be certified by the police chief or public safety director of the state to have a blue flashing light on your vehicle, and the red lights are the same way. I think the volunteer fire departments have to have their own certified vehicles, and they drive them and not their private vehicles. I think that was stopped a number of years ago.
And then there's yellow.
Constables can't run a red. I mean, a
do they run a
either.
Green? Is that who runs a green?
I think that's some of the constables.
But that
they're prohibited by law, and from running a blue light or a red light.
Okay. Now,
occasionally, some of them violate that law.
Yeah. Well, we've had some issues.
Yeah, there have been. Some of them have been ticketed, and it's just the law. And they come to me like, "Well, I'm a constable." I'm like, "Well, I can't tell you that you can violate the law."
Right,
the law is really the law. I'm not going to tell an ordinary deputy to not enforce the law.
Once again, you're in the business of law enforcement, not law creation. We have to go back to our civics class here that y'all enforce the law, you don't create the law.
That's right.
And that, that goes back to whether we're
talking about... And the judges interpret.
That's right.
The interpret judges, whether we enforced it correctly.
Well, that, I mean, that goes back to a discussion about, you know, about conceal and carry and open carry and all those kind of things, too. People are like, oh, well, the, you know, law enforcement saying this and that. No.
No, it's the law. I mean, it's settled law. And if you want it changed, you go to the legislature.
It's like, yeah, we learned that back in 11th grade, I think. It seems to be forgotten. You and I also talked in the past here about people wanting to give tips earlier through the... Let's talk about that app if people haven't downloaded yet. I know a lot of people go to see who's in jail, but... Yeah. There's also a lot of else
you can download our app, Team Sheriff, and we have an app. It's free, and it gives you seven or eight different things you can go to and shows you where crime's occurring. You can check and see who's wanted. It has a list of all our active warrants. It'll show you who's in jail for the last 24 hours. It has a crime tip where you can send in a crime tip to
like
us.
Like the person who was asking, hey, we've got drug activity.
Yeah, that's a perfect place for them to send it in and give us that information. You can also go to the website if you don't have the app. You can go to mobilecountyso.com, and you can also give us a tip there, and we protect your anonymity, and you know, we'll work it there. We've made a lot of good cases that way. You can tip us off if you know where somebody's wanted, where they're hanging out at. You can send a tip in on that person. You can look, see if they're wanted in a warrant section. If you know them and know where they're at, let us know where we're at. We'll go pick them up.
And you're not going to tell that person?
No,
who,
absolutely not.
So if, you know, if it's ringing in somebody's ears today that there's somebody like that, like this person who was bothered by this drug activity there, and
sure.
I'm sure a lot of people don't want to be the person that's known as the person that reported them. They don't have to be.
That's right. And you can take your time and write it out, you know, to give us the details of it or something
right.
like that, to tag numbers and names of people and approximate ages and describe the house or the vehicles.
All right, so the app, of course, Team Sheriff, or Mobile County,
what is it? SO.com, or like us on Facebook.
All right, Sheriff, as always, appreciate your time.
Thank you, Sean. Enjoyed your listeners. They're always very helpful to me as well.
All right, if we don't see you before, we'll see you next month.
Yes, sir.
All right, good to see you down at the rodeo.
Enjoy fishing. Those are some huge fish if you've never seen them offload. I was amazed a few years ago just how big one of those big blue marlins are. They're monsters.
Yeah, when they come in there and you stand next to them and all of a sudden
they lay it out in front of you and they've got this long cork that they're pushing it in on it. Like, my gosh, how long is that thing?
It's going to be a lot of fun this weekend down at the wharf, and we'll talk more about that coming up. Feinbaum on the way next.